Welcome to the Optimal Body Podcast. I'm Doc Jen.
And I'm Dr. Dom, and we are doctors of physical therapy, bringing you the body tips and physical therapy pearls of wisdom to help you begin to understand your body, relieve your pains and restrictions, and answer your questions.
Along with expert guests, our goal of the Optimal Body Podcast is really to help you discover what optimal means within your own body. Let's dive in.
When we understand and learn about how our body manages glucose, we can start to create better environments that really support our overall health. And that's really the goal. That's what we want to bring you and show how we're doing it within our own lives, because we're learning as well, Dom and I. So what Dom and I have done a couple times, and actually what we're doing now, especially after having the baby, is we're putting on a continuous glucose monitor. And this isn't for weight loss. This isn't for postpartum anything. This is really to understand and get back to the markers of my health, and this one being monitoring my glucose. And when you are able to do that, you really start to see how it plays a role in your mood, your fatigue, your cravings, just a lot of different health markers that we might not think about how glucose is really affected throughout the day. And so actually we're working with NutriSense. And if you go check the link, we're going to have it linked up in the show notes, but NutriSense.io/optimalbody. They gave us a promo code so that you can try this as well. And it's promo code OptimalBody, the whole one word, OptimalBody. And this gives you $30 off of any NutriSense subscription plan. Plus, you get 1 month free of dietitian support. And I think that's what's so amazing about using NutriSense over any other, you know, continuous glucose monitor. This is really to understand your health, understand these markers, understand what you can do to start to make changes throughout the day so that you can feel something different and ultimately make these health changes. So again, if you want to check that out, that's NutriSense.io/optimalbody with promo code OptimalBody. So excited for this next guest, because you're going to learn so much of her incredible story. And then there's so many practical tools that you'll also get within this episode. So Rachel Luna, who's also a good friend of mine, is the author of the new book that just released yesterday called Permission to Offend. So you can get it right now. We're going to have it linked down in the show notes. She is a highly sought after international speaker, certified master neuroscience coach to 6- and 7-figure earning entrepreneurs. She's named in Forbes as one of the 11 most inspiring female entrepreneurs to follow on Instagram. And this former U.S. Marine has a reputation for inspiring confident action and helping her clients double, triple, and quadruple their income. Her clients often refer to her as the secret weapon. Rachel calls herself a magnet for miracles, because despite losing her parents to AIDS, struggling with eating disorders in her teens, and battling alcoholism and depression in her early 20s, Rachel has never allowed herself to be limited by life circumstances. Instead, she persevered, and when she was diagnosed with triple negative breast cancer, which we're going to talk about and discuss what that is, in the summer of 2019, Rachel tackled it the same way she does with everything: confidence, faith, and love. And within 30 days, she was cancer-free, and today she continues to thrive, teach, and activate confidence in others through her top-rated podcast called Permission to Offend, which has listeners in over 90 countries around the world, social media platforms, email lists, courses, her live event, Confidence Activated, and journaling membership, the Faith Activated Journaling Experience. Rachel is on a mission to help 11 million women step into faith and worth and wealth. Standing only 4 feet, 11 inches tall, Rachel is tiny but a mighty firecracker who lights up a room and galvanizes her audience all around the world. An international speaker, Rachel has been invited to share her powerful talks all across the globe, from the US to Europe to Japan. And she's been featured in Forbes twice, the Huffington Post, Success Magazine, and Latina Magazine, among many others. If you're ready to return to your truth, own it, and live fully expressed without fear of judgment, rejection, or defamation, so that you can step into your next level of elevation, Rachel Luna is the girl you call. Rachel, thank you so much for taking the time to chat with us today all about your new book, which I see behind you, Permission to Offend, which I'm so excited for. But also, I just know you've been through so many like crazy life experiences and things that, you know, anyone can go through unexpectedly. And so I think hearing your message, hearing your story is going to be so inspiring for so many people. So just thank you so much for being here.
Thank you for having me. I love you both so much. So it's fun.
Yeah, I'm super excited to dive in. Just one, from knowing you over the past years. I mean, really, since I met Jen, met you not too long after, but just in your early history where, you know, you fought different eating disorders, depression, some alcoholism in your 20s. You have history in the military, in the Marine Corps, but even just more recently, in 2019, you were diagnosed with breast cancer. And I know that over the last 3 years, diagnosed with triple negative breast cancer. So maybe we can learn what triple negative means and why that makes you unique even in the breast cancer world. But I know that's just molded your journey over these past 3 years. And a lot of the messages from your Permission to Offend book kind of appear in that story. So I would love to hear kind of about that story and how it really helped you give yourself the permission to offend.
Yeah, thank you for asking. So first of all, triple negative breast cancer is the most aggressive form of breast cancer, and it disproportionately affects women of color. And actually, more Black women are prone to die from triple negative breast cancer than any other person diagnosed. And I thank you, by the way, for giving me the opportunity to share these statistics, because it's a conversation that isn't often mentioned. And one of the reasons that this happens is because, traditionally speaking, Black women don't have the same access to care. Black women are often more dismissed when they say that they have a problem, and that leads to more fatality. Now, I myself am Puerto Rican. I'm a very light-skinned Puerto Rican. However, I as well experienced being dismissed by doctors. So when I first found the lump and I finally got into an appointment, the doctor looked at me. He said, "You're young. You have no history of breast cancer. Let's just wait and see. Come back in 3 months." And I was outraged that someone would even tell me, "Let's just wait and see," when we didn't know what we were waiting to see. And so I looked at him, and I'm just a spicy girl. And I looked at him and literally out loud said, "You are crazy if you think I'm leaving here without a diagnostic mammogram. I need to know what this is." And he looked at me and he goes, "Oh, you haven't had a mammogram?" And I was flabbergasted because I had just filled out the form in his office that said, "I've never had a mammogram." So we scheduled a mammogram, and that same day, thank God, those doctors were like, "Well, let's biopsy it." And I knew right away that something wasn't quite right, from the fact that she said, "I don't know what this is, but if you need to come back, the doctor that referred you is trash."
Oh, wow.
And I mean, that was an angel straight from God, because he was trash. Anyway, so we get the results the very next day. I'm walking to the park with my kids, and I get a phone call, and that I still get the chills when I think about that phone call, because my whole entire life changed in that moment. My perspective, my outcome, my outlook, my beliefs all shifted in one moment when that very same doctor that told me just a week before, "Let's wait and see," said to me, "You have invasive ductal carcinoma." And I was like, "What? I don't understand." And he says, "You have cancer." And my breath left my body and the world stopped. And I said, "Wait, is there any chance that it could be a mistake?" And he cut me off. He didn't even let me process. And he said, "No, it's cancer. And the next thing we need to do is bring you in right away." And it was a lot of, "Now we need to hurry up," because triple negative is so aggressive that, for example, the tumor that they found in me was doubling at 93% per day. So remember, this is the same man that said, "Come back in 3 months."
Crazy.
I went to see another doctor. I wasn't going to give him any of my money or time or business. Clown, no thanks. But right there, I had to give myself permission to offend.
Yeah.
Because I had to tell this doctor, who is the professional, that, "No, I don't believe in you. I don't trust you with my life." And that's what we're dealing with now. This is literally a life or death situation. So I went to see another doctor, and a couple of months prior, I should say this, a couple of months prior to the diagnosis, someone had told me about a documentary. I did not think that I was sick. I had no indication that I was sick other than, that's not true, I did have indications that I was sick. Hmm. I just wasn't paying attention. And this is why I love the work that the two of you do, because it's so important to pay attention to your body. It gives you small, subtle clues. One of the clues was that I felt a lot of inflammation in the year leading up to the diagnosis. And I remember one day saying to my best friend, I said, my body feels like it's screaming at me. Like, I'm so inflamed. But I was really busy. I was really super stressed. And I kept saying, after this event, which I was putting together, after this event, then I'll focus on my health. And so I was also exhausted and I couldn't figure out why. I had terrible sleep. I was sweating at night all the time. You're not supposed to sweat in your sleep. Yeah. That's not like a normal thing.
Yeah.
I didn't know that. So there were all these clues. Anyway, I watched this documentary, and in that documentary, they talk about all these different alternatives to healing cancer besides chemotherapy and radiation. And there was something that just spoke to me about the opportunity that I could heal my body without the harsh chemicals or toxins. And I want to be very clear about this. And I talk about this in the book, In Permission to Offend, as well. Number one, this is not medical advice. And number two, I'm not against allopathic medicine. I did do some chemo. I did a low-dose chemotherapy called insulin potentiated therapy, IPT. They give you the exact same chemo drugs. So I got the Red Devil and the, you know, whatever they're called. I got those, but at a lower dose. Mm-hmm. And so I just want to make sure that whoever's listening to this, you know what's right for you.
Yeah.
You know what's right for your body. But do you have the courage and the conviction to speak your truth, even at the risk of offending others? Even if it means, like I talk about in the book, talking back to your parents, which I did. So when I got diagnosed, my mom was like, you're in denial, Rachel, because I didn't want to do, they recommended 53 weeks of full-blown chemotherapy and 53 weeks.
Oh my gosh.
Wow.
I just don't believe that I'd still be here having this conversation with you if I had said yes to that.
Yeah.
I'm only 4'11". Like, where were they going to put all those drugs? You know what I mean? Like, just from a practical. So my mom, who is angry and scared, and this is something that we need to remember, that when other people in our lives project or they get angry, anger is just a symptom of fear. So more than likely, they're afraid. Mm-hmm. Whatever you're doing, it's fracturing their identity. It's shaking their belief system. It's challenging their values and everything that they know to be true. And they're internalizing, if you do this and it goes against my beliefs and my values, it's going to hurt me in some way, mm-hmm. shape, or form. For my mother, if I didn't choose the standard of care, and God forbid I didn't make it, then I was leaving her.
Right.
You know? Yeah. That's how we all look at things.
Right.
So never be too upset at the other person. Just recognize it's a human emotion. It's a human response. So I scream at her, Mommy, I am not in denial. If I were in denial, I wouldn't be doing anything at all.
Yeah.
I'm doing everything. I'm doing 5 coffee enemas a day. I am drinking so much green juice. I was drinking 13 8-ounce cold pressed juices every day that I was juicing on the hour. I was taking 90 individual capsules of supplements and vitamins every single day. I was spending an hour several times a week in the hyperbaric oxygen chamber. I mean, what wasn't I doing to heal my body? I went vegan. I went 100% organic. I stopped eating sugar, salt, nuts, seeds, legumes, oil. Flavor, you know?
Yeah.
Totally.
Doing all the things. I just wasn't doing all the things she wanted me to do.
Exactly. And what she knew to be true. I think that's what, that is what we see, you know, is this is what the medical system has always told me. This is what I have. This is the only way I know. And a lot of times when it's the only way that people know, even doctors, then it's really hard to present something different, you know, and that is where I think, you know, that embodies permission to offend. And that's so sad that sometimes we have to do that in our medical system, is to self-advocate so much that you do feel like, you know, I need to set my boundaries. I need to self-advocate. I need to maybe possibly offend my family members or my doctors in order to get the care that I know in my heart that I need.
Yes, yes. And think about this. This isn't just in the medical arena, but it's in anything. It's in business. It's in relationships, right? Where we know something to be true because it's how we've been conditioned. It's how we've been programmed. And so whenever someone introduces an idea, a belief, a thought that is contrary to how we've been programmed, it fractures the identity. And so that's actually something I talk about in Permission to Offend, that one of the reasons why we're struggling right now, in my opinion, as a society, is that we're not taught identity work. So in school, we are not taught to challenge our beliefs. And, you know, I'm a Christian woman, but I have friends that I don't even care who you worship. I only care about who I'm worshiping and what that relationship is looking like, right? But we have people that can't have conversations about each other's beliefs or political views, because as soon as someone says something that's contrary to what you've been programmed to believe, you get angry, you get frustrated, you feel like indignant. And it's only because there's a part of you that in the unconscious level isn't sure who's right. And we have been taught that we have to be right. Think about it. In school, what do they teach you? Get good grades, get straight A's, get a perfect score. Do not fail. Don't get the wrong answer. And I really am on a mission to make it more humane for us to be wrong, right? To make failing more palatable and to make it an experience where we're not, quote unquote, failing, we're learning, and we're giving each other the grace to be human and make a mistake. Do you know how many wars are started from misunderstandings? Do you know how many marriages fail for misunderstanding or because one person doesn't know how to communicate the way that the other does? And because we are not taught to actually sit in the suck.
Yeah.
We're not taught how to navigate through failure. Right away, up, we're failing. Divorce.
Yeah.
Up, we're failing. The business is sinking. Close shop. And it's like, no, 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 no. We can actually work with this if we're willing to have even harder conversations. Exactly. If we're willing to live a little more uncomfortably in a new arena. You know, here's the other thing. We get very comfortable in our misalignment. And I think you all can understand this from the PT perspective, right? You have patients come in and their hips are all out of place, but the patient has been walking that way for so long, they don't even realize that they're all jacked up.
Right.
And then they have a session with you and you like tug and pull and they're like, oh my gosh, new me. So I say this, that when you are born into captivity, you don't even know that freedom exists. And I think that we have been living in captivity. And I hope that as people read this book, they set themselves free.
And I think that, I mean, you said something that was really profound to me in that, you know, we just struggle to have those difficult conversations. And I think it kind of relates to something you said earlier where, you know, that anger comes from fear. You know, it's a product of the fear, and it's a product of that, like you said, maybe subconscious fear that is like, maybe I'm not right. So I need to lash out so that they don't have an opportunity to tell me more and to open up the conversation in a way that might show me, hey, there's some things that I can learn here. And so that's where I think that I really like this permission to offend message, because it's a message just as much for the person delivering the potentially offensive whatever, political view, religious view, view in business, the person in the room with the CEO who doesn't want to say the thing because he thinks the CEO is doing something wrong. And it's just as much a message for the person who's receiving that potentially offensive bit of information, because getting offended and lashing out with anger because of that fear is a choice. Or you can make the choice to sit and receive that and say, let me ask a few more questions before I allow myself to get emotional about anything. Let me dig a little more into this and learn something from it. And was that kind of the intention, you know, behind this, that it's just as much a message for the person who's delivering the offense as much as the person who's receiving the offense?
Absolutely. And so one of the things I say in the book is that curiosity is the key to clarity. So the more questions you're willing to ask yourself and the other person, the more connective tissue we're going to find, the more opportunity for community and collaboration will exist. But often we don't even give ourselves that grace or space to explore. And that, you know, the other part of it is when you're, I have a quiz called the offense capacity quotient, right? It's a little quiz that you take, because I have a theory that if you are thin-skinned, if you get easily offended, you have a big problem with other people speaking their truth. And if you have a big problem with other people speaking their truth, you're probably not speaking your truth, because we don't want to be the thing we don't like, right?
Yeah.
So in the offense, I say in the book, the best way to start living a permission to offend lifestyle is to develop a thicker skin, to raise your offense capacity. That means, how tolerant are you to new ideas, new thoughts, new beliefs? How malleable are you in situations where your truth is being questioned, when you're being called to court? And I think that, you know, if we can talk very briefly about entrepreneurs, because that's typically who I typically work with, you know, it's so interesting because I'll ask them, who do you serve, right? Who's your ideal client? And I get a lot of, well, there's no conviction there. There's no conviction. When I see your sales struggling, I understand that you don't have clarity of who you're serving, who you are, why you're here, what your mission is. And that's not just for entrepreneurs. That's all of us, right? At what's my life purpose? What's my mission? It's because you haven't giving yourself permission to really question what you're doing, why you're doing, and what you would rather be doing.
How do we start to open up that conversation? Say it's with, you know, I think the most difficult people it could be to have these kinds of conversations with is usually family, right?
Yes.
And being able, and like, just like you said, like, how did you navigate that situation even with your mom? Being so afraid and being in conditioned in one way and seeing her daughter, who she's afraid to lose her life, you know, doing something completely different. So how do we start having these more open, truthful, thicker skin conversations with people that it is the hardest to do that with?
So I actually wouldn't start with those people because those people are typically not doing the work.
Yeah.
So you're going to try to have an elevated conversation with someone who is in prison and in emotional bondage from generational curses of limiting beliefs and poor mindset patterns. So I wouldn't start there. I would start with someone who's doing the work with you. And this is why I say, get a book club together, get a couple of friends and practice having difficult conversations with each other. Talk about race, talk about religion, talk about politics, set the stage and say, look, this is a safe space. We might say some really messed up things from our own ignorance. Nothing is going to be held personal. We're trying to navigate this and learn from one another. So you already know in your life, one or two people that are truly, truly safe.
Yeah.
And that they're not going to cut you off. You know, why this work is so scary is because And the unconscious mind believes that if I say the wrong thing, then I'm going to get cut off. I'm going to get canceled. I'm going to get disconnected. And the primitive brain is conditioned to believe that we cannot survive without community. So I can't get cut off from my people because then I'll die.
Yeah.
It's very irrational, the poor primitive brain.
Yeah.
So you have to remind your brain, we're not going to die. Even people that get canceled don't get canceled forever.
Yeah.
I mean, Will Smith was just canceled like 5 months ago, and now he's got a new movie and everybody is praising him and whatever, right? Like,
it's
you're
true.
Not going to be canceled forever. Now, with regard to my mother, I was dying.
Yeah.
So I didn't care. Yeah. I wanted to, I was Operation Stay Alive. And so, you're either going to get to the point where you have such a compelling will and conviction to your vision that you just don't care if they receive it well or not. But I teach you in the book to lean into what I call the empathetic offender identity, where you don't care in that you're not going to be, you're not going to feel hindered to speak your truth. But you do care in that you're not out for blood, right?
Yeah.
So I teach you the steps that you can have the conversation. And I did raise my voice to my mother, but I softened the blow by saying, if you can't support me in this, then maybe you shouldn't talk to me while I'm doing this. But I want you to be there with me. I want your support.
Yeah.
So please, get on board with this, because this train is leaving the station and I don't want to do this without you, mommy. But if you cannot support me, I have to do it without you because I want to live. And
yeah.
This is the way that I've chosen to live.
Yeah.
And thank God she got on board.
That's huge. That's huge.
That's incredible. And so as you're starting this more alternative path, like you said, you chose, where are things now? How does the quote unquote result look?
The results look great. I'm 3 years cancer free. Praise God. Me by myself. but I say we because I wasn't alone.
Yeah.
I had a team of people that really helped me. I had a team of doctors that, even though they didn't agree with what I was doing, many of them got on board. So I just had my scans in October of this year. They look great. Lab work looks good. But the journey doesn't stop, right? You all see me with my green juice and I do my daily coffee enemas. One thing I do want to improve on is more movement, more strength training. This is something I still haven't quite mastered.
Yeah.
But in that, we get to give ourselves grace, you know? Like, I'm failing in the weight training category, but every day that I don't weight train, it's an opportunity for me to go introspective and say, like, okay, what's my fear? What's holding me back? Is it a worth issue? Is it a fear that I'm going to waste time and not get the results? Like, you get to have these conversations. And then at one point, you know, you just really get to tell yourself, look, buck up, kid. Buck up and get your ass to the gym and like lift the weight. But you can also make these incremental changes. Like this morning, I knew I wasn't going to the gym. I got out a gallon jug and I just did squats with my little gallon jug.
Heck yeah.
And I felt so good about it because I was giving myself permission to make a change in my way, my race, my pace.
Exactly. Yeah. I love that. And that's what's so important. Like, movement doesn't have to look a certain way. And neither does anyone's health journey. It gets to be what you find dependent for you. But being able to understand that and analyze that and see where do I need to go in, that is where the meat happens. That's where the change happens, you know? And I know you talk about journaling a lot as well. And
yes.
I would love to understand that process a little bit more. I think some people might, you know, the idea of journaling is like, that sounds great, but would I actually stick to it? And why would I do it?
What do I write? When do I do it?
So I think understanding a little bit more about your experience with journaling, what you recommend would really help to understand that space.
Mm-hmm. Great. Well, if you pre-order the book, Chapter 9, I give you the full thing, but I'm going to give you the full thing right here too.
Perfect.
Why? Look at that.
Because I want you to have it. So the first question, and I want to really lean to what dumb ass of like, what do I journal around?
Yeah.
And am I going to like, why do this? Am I going to stick with it? I want you to understand from the neuroscience perspective, there are so many studies that prove that when you write things down, especially in a scripting manner, which is the third step of the method, and I'll talk about that in just a second. But when you write things down, you're more likely to take the action associated with what you've written down. Mm. Why? Because the brain doesn't know the truth between the brain doesn't know the difference between the truth or a lie. So when you write something as you desire it to be, as if it's already happened, your brain is like, huh, wait a minute. She wrote something about Alexis in the garage. I don't see Alexis in the garage. What? How could we get Alexis in the garage? Now the brain is designed to do what? Keep you alive,
yeah,
and create patterns, right? It's an efficient organ. And people forget that. It's very efficient and it wants to help you live. So it's going to start looking for evidence. Now there's possibility. Now you're unlocking creativity. The other thing is that when you write things down, it unlocks a different part of your brain versus just thinking about something or versus speaking it out loud. So you can think something. Now I challenge you to write down all of your thoughts as they're coming in through your brain on paper. That's actually the first step of my journal method. So the three steps are write, shift, script. Why do we write whatever comes to mind? It goes to Dom's question, what do I write? Well, first of all, before you're going to get breakthrough from your journaling, you have to identify limiting beliefs that are perplexing you. Your unconscious mind is actually what's driving the majority of your decisions, your behaviors, and your actions on any given day. We think it's our conscious mind. No. The conscious mind is just the manager. But the unconscious mind is the CEO, okay? So if the CEO is thinking crappy thoughts, then the manager is making crappy decisions. So you write it. And sometimes it can be as, and I've got my journal out, so I'm opening it because this is, I'm so conditioned to, like, okay, let's do this, right? Yeah. So you're going to write anything. This is so stupid. This feels like a waste of time. Whatever your thoughts are. And then just stop right there and read your thoughts. Read them out loud. In your mind, they sound very rational. They don't sound negative. They sound neutral. But when you read them out loud, you will start to see the condition of your heart. You will start to see the energy that's operating through your cells. I think this part is really important when we talk about health perspective. Why did I get cancer in the first place? Young woman, no history of breast cancer. I was riddled with fear. I was afraid every single day. I was stressed. My thoughts were so negative, right? All of that is impacting your DNA at the cellular level. And when people tell me that they don't want to invest the time to journal, in my mind, I'm like, well, I guess you just don't want to invest the time in your well-being. You don't want to invest the time in executing on your dreams because you think, I don't have time to journal, but you have time to scroll on social media,
right,
and to consume and adopt other people's beliefs, but you don't have time to examine your own beliefs and figure out what is driving your operating system. No, we have to make the shift in the priorities. So that's the first step. Just write it all down. The second step, and by the way, in the book, I give you journal prompts for an entire week to help facilitate and answer Dom's questions. What do I journal about? I've got you. The second step is to shift. You're going to shift into a state of excitement and gratitude. Because when you feel good, when you feel grateful, there's this peace that washes over you, right? So people that operate from a spirit of gratitude tend to be healthier. And I said, before diagnosis, I said I was grateful. But if I really examined the way that I was living, I wasn't living from a place of gratitude and abundance. I was thinking thoughts of scarcity and lack and always want, need. And one of the things I say, if your current life never changed and the thought of that doesn't bring you peace, you're in bondage. You're not living in gratitude. That doesn't mean you can't want more. Of course, listen, I am ready for my Lexus wagon thingy. I don't even, if it's like a G something, whatever. I know what it looks like. I'm ready for that. But I am so grateful for my cute little Honda Accord that's sitting out there that's still taking me from A to Z. And if I never get a Lexus, that's okay too. Mm-hmm. I'm not going to give up on the dream of a Lexus. I'm not going to give up on a dream of my whatever it is that I'm desiring. But I'm going to be really grateful for what I've got going on right now, because it's not going to be any better than this. Why? Because we don't know what the next moment looks like. Think about what happened in 2019. Everybody was like, 2020, please come. I'm so ready for 2020. 2020 is going to be my breakout year. 2020 was like a big slap you in the face year, right? For a lot of people. Yeah. So you're going to shift into a state of gratitude, energy, and expectation. And in your journal, that might look like, I'm so grateful and excited now that I feel so good because, man, when I think of all the things that I prayed for, and I look and I see that I prayed to be on this very podcast, and here we are. I prayed for this very baby. I prayed for this very man or this very woman or this very person. How often do we actually take a moment to give praise and gratitude for what we already have? Mm-hmm. You know how grateful I am that I have this juice today? Because there are some days where I don't get a juice. And it's like, it just changes everything. And then step three is the script. And this is where you're going to write your desires as if they've already come to pass. When I had active cancer, every day I wrote, I am so grateful and excited now that I am cancer free. Every single cell in my body is healed, healthy, and whole. Every organ in my body is working exactly as it should be. I am healthy and healed from the top of my head to the soles of my feet. Now, here's the thing about scripting. At some point, your unconscious mind is going to be like, nope, not true. Ego is going to be like, liar, you're lying. When that happens, don't abandon. Don't abandon cart. Get curious. Huh? Why am I resistant to the idea that I could be healthy? Why am I resistant? And then the answer could be because you have active cancer, because there's still cancer that's active. And then just say, yes, there is. And I'm so grateful and excited that I'm doing all the things that I know to do. I'm drinking my juice. I'm doing my coffee. I'm whatever it is that you're doing for healing. Remind your mind what you're doing. If you haven't started doing anything, say, mind, I'm working on a plan, and it will be so good if we could all work together so that when I don't feel like going to the gym, or when I don't want to do my PT exercises, or when I don't want to show up for myself, I'm reminded that we said this mattered. And I really encourage you to treat your mind, your will, your emotions, all the things that make up your soul as your team. So when I say we got our scans, it's me, it's my unconscious mind, it's my ego, it's my will, my thoughts, my emotions, my whole soul, everything that makes up my being, all my cells, we got scanned. Every cell in my body, every fiber in my soul, we got a scan.
That literally gave me chills when you talked about the perspective of writing in that script, you know, and saying where you are, even though you weren't there right at that mm-hmm. moment, you know, and being able to see that, to write that, even though you're afraid, you're going through it, you're in the process. And I think that, you know, this doesn't have to be just about cancer. This is about anything in life, anything
you're going through. This house I live in.
Yes.
I journaled about this house that I live in before it was my house. When I lived in an apartment, you know, on the other side of town, I journaled about this house, and I'm literally looking out the French doors of my office because I had written about that. I'm looking at the fireplace that I journaled that there were going to be two fireplaces in my home, and there's one fireplace right there, and there's one fireplace in my bedroom. And I journaled how there would be an extra back door that led out to the pool so that people can come in through that door right into the bathroom and not get water all over my hardwood floors. And I have hardwood floors and a pool, and a door that goes into that bathroom that I saw in my journal. And people think, oh, This is just the fluke. Mm-hmm. Try it. And one last thing I'll say about journaling is that do not make this one more thing in your life that you say you're either passing or failing. I didn't journal for 30 days straight, so I failed. No, just do it. If you do it one time a month, hey, at least you did it one time a month. If you do it two times a week, great. You did it two times a week. Continue to give it a go until it becomes part of your natural habit.
Now, I think that's huge. And again, I think that's another thing a lot of people ask, like, how often do I do it? Yeah. Or when do I do it, morning or night? And it's just like, as often as you're able to commit to consistently. Because we're talking neurologic processes here, and it takes a long time to start getting new neurologic grooves formed up in our network up here. And so, again, I appreciate how in-depth of a peek you gave us into chapter 9.
But seriously.
Again, that's chapter 9. And I know, like you said, there's going to be so many more tools in there to help people start down that path and start developing these consistent routines and patterns to really help living differently and really help believing differently. Because that belief is that first step. And Rachel, thank you so much for coming and sharing some of your story and how that relates so much into this incredible book that is on pre-order now. And I know that people can get, where can they go to get their hands on this thing?
Well, thank you so much for having me. You can go to permissiontooffend.com/presale. If it's already out, you can go to permissiontooffend.com. And there are definitely bonuses. So I would love to treat you to some of the bonuses that I have when you pre-order your copy. And more than anything, I hope that you will take my advice and get a group of friends to get the book and do this work together, because little science for you. When you condition yourself for patterns of victory, when you get those small little wins and success, then your unconscious mind believes, oh, this is a safe activity. And you're more likely to then put it into practice out in the real world. I call it a fence in the wild.
I love that.
I think that's huge. And I think that subtly is a message that I really want to reiterate as well, that we're moving more and more towards being unable to have tough conversations with people in our world, whether it's a stranger, a friend, or family. And I've been fortunate to have the opposite experience in life, where early on and through my family and other experiences, I've been able to learn how to have a lot of those hard conversations. And they are when I learn the most, and they are when I grow the most, and they are when I continue to expand my scope of thick-skinnedness and the ability to be open to those conversations. So again, I want to reiterate that message to people, like, try and put yourself in those situations so you can continue to have those victories, learn more about yourself and learn more about other people in our world, because that's really what the focus should be. Rachel, thanks so much again for coming on. We always appreciate a conversation with you.
Thank you so much. I love you both.
Such an incredible interview with Rachel, all about how to step into that truth, how to start giving yourself that permission to offend. If you're interested in checking out her book, go down to the link in the show notes, check that out. And remember, it just came out yesterday. So get your hands on that. And if you enjoyed this podcast, please send it out to somebody. Send it out to somebody who you might have a different opinion from and want to start stimulating more conversation with. If you've been enjoying these podcasts, please consider leaving us a rating and review on your favorite podcasting platform. And of course, we'll see you next time.